There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh! A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Kaz Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now, live via Zoom, is not my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. He had to run away on a business trip. He's ducking me. He doesn't like my draft takes. I see how it is. But I've replaced him. I brought in the big guns. From Cleveland.com, we welcome back to the podcast, Chris Fedor. Chris, how you doing?
Justin, I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You have now been elevated to friend of the podcast status.
Yes.
Now that you've made it twice, you are a friend of the podcast. So I'm really excited to have you on. And I'm also really excited that the Cavs rebrand dropped, because there is one thing I love, and it's the Hoop V. And the Hoop V is finally back. I love the tweaks that they made to it, kind of making it look a little bit like the Larry O'Brien trophy. What did you think of the Cavs rebrand?
I thought it was good. I thought it was executed well, Justin. I think what it comes down to is what they're going to do with the gold, because obviously they're going to feature it prominently. That's what the whole thing was about. Gold is the standard. Gold is back. And I think if they execute it right, it's going to be really, really good. I actually saw a presentation from the organization a few weeks in advance where they looked at PSG, which is a soccer club, that just released a kit about a year ago. I think it was their third different kit, where it had black, wine, white, and gold. And the way that they did it was really, really good. And it worked really, really well. So gold's going to be prominent. Gold looks fantastic if you do it right. And it seems like, based on the rebrand and the logos, that they did do it right. So I'm a fan of what they did.
I've got my fingers crossed for the jerseys. I'm excited. I'm hoping there's at least one with the Cavs with the Hoop V on it. I think that's probably a safe bet, but you're right. I think it is going to come down to execution, because you can't necessarily slap the gold Cavs onto like a white jersey. Like, that might look a little washed out. So I'm excited to see what it looks like. And what I like about it, so I'm one of those people that collects way too many jerseys. Carter gives me crap for it all the time. I think any situation where you wear a tank top, you can wear a jersey, which he always responds saying I shouldn't be wearing tank tops at my age.
No, you should not. What are you doing?
You know what? I am what I am. I'm weird. It is what it is.
Hey man, as long as you're comfortable with it, that's the key. You got to be comfortable in your own skin.
Exactly. I mean, look at the entrances players make in the NBA. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not, but if you're confident with it, it works. But I like the fact that it's not something completely new. Like, and with the Cavs, I feel like they've had so many different identities over the last few years, and I like connecting to, well, my personal favorite being the Hoop V, but you know, it kind of incorporating some of those aspects from the past, because be nice to kind of have like a sustainable look, something that you can move forward with, something for this era of the team to kind of make their own while also connecting to the history of the team. Because I mean, there's some cool looks in the past, and I think this is a step in that direction. So I'm excited.
I agree with you. I thought it was the perfect blend of modern and classic. And it seemed like that's what they were going for. You know, Daniel Arsham grew up a Cavs fan. He has his favorite memories. He drew back on some of those memories, and some of those teams obviously had logos that were similar to what he wanted to modernize. And, you know, it wasn't a complete overhaul, which is good, because oftentimes if you do a complete overhaul and you ignore tradition and you ignore history, you know, people get up in arms about that. I think this is the kind of combination that people are going to be okay with. It's new enough for the people that wanted something different, something fresh, and something that's going to represent this newer era of Cavs basketball. And I think there's enough old touches to it to satisfy, you know, the people that want to still be connected to history. The other thing that I like, Justin, is that they streamlined the logos. You know, at times I feel like there were just too many logos for the Cavs. Like there was the C, then there was the C with the sword in it, then there was the C with the sword in it and the shield, and there was the C and the shield, and there was just like way too much going on. So I think them creating this family of logos that all ties in together, like even the Hoop V, like it's just a branch off of the Cavs with the Hoop V. You know what I mean? So like it all ties together and it all is like a family of logos that makes sense. And I don't think, you know, fans are going to be confused by what is their actual logo, because for the past 5 years, do you have any clue what their actual logo was?
I do, because I'm a freak that collects every jersey and every look, and I'm going to be aware. But I think for the casual, that certainly could be an issue. And right. You're right. Like I think when you go to something that's not connected to your history at all, it's got to be really good in order to justify it. Like I look at kind of the mock-ups for the Utah Jazz, their new look, and that's the look you introduce when you're going to blow things up and you don't want people to remember that era. But it absolutely is within the family of looks that the Cavs have had. And welcoming back to the Cavs family since the last podcast is Luke Walton, rejoining the coaching staff. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know a whole lot about kind of what assistant coaches do. I think obviously whenever you bring in someone with high basketball IQ like Luke Walton, that's only going to help a locker room. There's a lot of voices that get involved. All I really recall from a fan perspective is in a time where there wasn't a lot of stability for the Cavs, he was someone that was credited as someone that's really liked in the locker room. Obviously, that was the case with Golden State. And even though it didn't work out great in Sacramento, I believe he has the highest winning percentage out of any coach for the Kings in recent history. What have you heard about kind of the excitement and what they feel Luke Walton can bring to the table as an assistant?
That's like saying Baker Mayfield's the best Browns quarterback of the last 20 years. It's like, okay, but what does that really mean when the competition is Spurgeon, Wynn, Kelly Holcomb, Tim Couch, Brian Hoyer, and all the schlubs that came through in the last two decades? You know, it's interesting because I talked to a lot of people around the NBA about this, Justin, because I don't know what he can do and what he can't do. I'm relying on people who are smarter than me. I'm relying on people who I trust. And I guess the way that I'll phrase it is that the reviews on Luke Walton as a coach are mixed. There are people that feel like he can connect with players. There are people that feel like he's a good offensive mind. There are people that like the experience that he's going to bring to the Cavs coaching staff. And there are other people that say a little bit overrated. You know, what he accomplished in Golden State, it was all about Steve Kerr. It was all about the infrastructure that they already had there. So I'm taking a wait and see approach when it comes to Luke. But I know this, J.P. Bickerstaff believes in him. J.P. Bickerstaff trusts him. Because if you think back to a couple of years ago when J.B. Was interviewing with the Cavs for their head coaching job and he didn't get it and it was given to John Beilein, JB was debating between the Cavs or the Sacramento Kings. He was going to be the right-hand man for Luke Walton there. He decided to come to Cleveland. They continued their relationship. Luke was at the practice facility multiple times earlier this year. So that connection with JB, that trust with JB, that speaking the same language and seeing things the same kind of way, having that synergy, I think that's just going to help by default.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. And I think one of the mistakes people make, like when they talk about coaching or they talk about the front office, like you reduce it to one person. But when in reality, it's very much like any other job where you have a lot of people, a lot of different voices, a lot of perspectives. Like when people ask, what are the Cavs thinking on this? It's not like you walk up to the Wizard of Oz curtain and there's the Cavs that you speak to, right? Like you have a front office made up of different individuals that value things differently. And I think that kind of collaboration is what you need. Like you need different perspectives. Otherwise you're going to have blind spots. So I'm excited. Like I think Luke can bring something to the table, but I think wait and see is the right approach because you just don't know how things are going to be delegated. That's usually never public anyway. So as long as the coaching staff is connecting with these young players and the players feel supported and you know, someone that they can bounce ideas off of and whatnot, I think that's a positive. But we should get to what I think everyone cares about the most right now, which is the NBA draft. You had an article today on Cleveland.com about the Cavs workout. Malachi Branham, Marjon Beauchamp, Keon Ellis, among others, came in today. Have you sensed any movement over the last week or so over kind of what names you're hearing in that mix at 14?
The only two things that I've gotten that I think are new, that are different, a lot of people at this point in time, Justin, they know the kinds of names that the Cavs are looking at. I feel like it's very similar to the trade deadline. You had a great grasp on some of the targets that the Cavs had, and their interest in Caris LeVert was like the worst kept secret in the entire NBA. I think I had that for the first time in December, 3 months before the trade deadline or something
like
that.
It seems like there's either the ones that come in season that are out of the blue, like the Jared Allen trade, or it's something like George Hill or Caris LeVert where it just makes so much sense and that's the name that's available and it comes to fruition.
Yeah, so I think when you look at 14, the names that the Cavs would like there that could be available are pretty obvious if you look at the holes on the roster. And I think they're at a point, Justin, where it's not just a talent grab specifically. They want the talent, there's no doubt about that. But it's got to fit. It's got to fit with what they're doing. And positional fit is going to drive this decision a little bit more than it has in the past. So we know this offseason they're targeting playmakers and they're targeting two-way wings. So if there is a prospect that fits that bill, the Cavs are going to be interested at 14. Mm-hmm. The only two new things that I've really found out beyond the obvious names that continue to get linked to the Cavs over and over and over again, Arizona's Dalen Terry is a player that the Cavs like. And there are many people that I've talked to recently that believe 14 isn't too high for Terry. And the comparison that I keep getting from people that I talk to that I trust is that he could be this year's Josh Primo. If you remember last year, Josh Primo cracked the lottery. Everybody was like, what? He went how high? He went number 12 overall to the San Antonio Spurs. And the Spurs looked at it and they said, this is an investment in the future. And had Primo gone back to Alabama, maybe he elevates his draft stock to top five, top eight. So we're getting a bargain 1 year in advance. I believe the Cavs are looking at Dalen Terry the same kind of way, that if he were to go back to Arizona and he would have gotten thrust into the role that a lot of people expected him to be in, that he probably would have elevated his stock to like top six in the 2023 draft or maybe top eight. Mm-hmm. So the Cavs are looking at it saying, we're getting him a year early in our player development program. He has the kind of skill set that we like. He's the archetype that we enjoy. Maybe it's somebody that makes sense for us. I'm not saying he's the guy at 14, because the way it's been phrased to me by my sources is that there are 10 to 12 different players on their radar in the mix. It's very, very difficult to narrow that down because nobody knows who's going to be there at 14.
Right.
But if you look at most mock drafts, Dalen Terry is going to be between 20 and 32. You know, there are some people that think he could fall to the second round.
And I think it was yesterday that Jonathan Givony on ESPN was asked, like, is Terry someone that maybe teams in this range could trade back for? And his response was interesting. He said, I could see him going 14 or 16 to the Atlanta Hawks. And again, this is peak misinformation season. There's so much out there. I want to caution our audience. People aren't making this stuff up. There's just so much information out there and so many smoke screens. But I gotta be honest.
The other name is Beauchamp, and you brought him up there. He wasn't just brought in today to work out against Malachi Branham. He is somebody that I'm told is in the mix at number 14. The Cavs do like him. So those are the two more off the radar guys that the Cavs do consider to be in the mix at number 14. And I reported recently, Justin, that for another year, the front office has given film breakdowns to JB Bickerstaff so he can get more familiar with these prospects. There are 10 to 12 of those names, and two of them are, I'm told, Dalen Terry and Marjon Beauchamp. So that doesn't mean that the Cavs are definitely going to pick from those 10 to 12 a lot of time before the draft actually happens on June 23rd. Mm-hmm. But if they think enough of those guys to give the film breakdowns to JB Bickerstaff, it's pretty telling, because if you go back a couple of years, the guys that he got were Patrick Williams, Isaac Okoro, Tyrese Halliburton, Obi Toppin, Denny Avdia, all guys that at that time were in the number five mix.
Now, am I going to be able to poke and prod and find out what other names you know are on that list?
So I think many of them are the ones that you've heard. EJ Liddell might be one that's kind of off the radar. I'm told that he was one of the breakdowns that JB received as well. Ty Washington, Johnny Davis, Tari Eason, Jeremy Sohan. I think the main off the radar ones that I've heard are Beauchamp and Dalen Terry. Mm-hmm. My source tells me that Jalen Williams from Santa Clara was not one of the film breakdowns that JB Bickerstaff received. And the sense that I get currently, and this could change again, but the sense I get currently is people inside the organization feel like 14 is a little bit too high for Williams, because they don't see the same kind of ceiling as like Usman Jang, like I said, Ty Washington, and some of the other names that have more ceiling attached to them.
Yeah, it's interesting because as a listener of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast, like Jalen Williams, I know was someone that you had brought up, and it felt like there was a little bit of a shift there. And I have to thank you for your reporting, because especially as an out-of-towner and someone that doesn't get into the sources game and whatnot, your reporting is our lifeblood. The beat, the job that you guys do is our lifeblood, because we wouldn't be able to talk about what's going on and kind of give our two cents on it without that. Now, I got to admit, I've fallen hard and fast for Dalen Terry. When I kind of looked at the Adam Spinella breakdown he just put out today, he does terrific draft scouting, great work. He'll actually be coming on the Chase Down, I believe on the 20th, so draft week. Excited to have him on there. But a lot of what I liked about Jalen Williams, I see with Dalen Terry, with a younger player that's more athletic. The passing is brilliant. The defense is like really disruptive. Not the same type of defender as Isaac Okoro, someone that's going to kind of impede your presence and do that, but almost like a Gary Trent Jr. in the sense of the active hands and turning defense into offense, those kind of pick six possessions. And he just seems like someone that's so fun to play with too. Like, he's got so much energy out there. He's someone that really, really excites me. So, I've fallen fast and hard, but it's interesting because this is a draft where I feel like I don't really have a super strong take. Like, I have no real experience in this range when it comes to the Cavs. Like, I've never dove into a draft class when they're in this range. It's usually much higher or much lower. Like, there's just so many options available. You don't know who's going to slide. Is there a name? And I guess the one that I kind of comes to mind is Johnny Davis, where I don't feel like there's been a lot of buzz surrounding him. Is there a name that you feel might slide? Because you keep hearing these names like Dyson Daniels, Malachi Branham, that might be jumping into the top 10. I know some teams like Sohan. Like, is Johnny Davis someone that you could see potentially sliding? And do you feel like the Cavs would jump on someone like Johnny Davis should he fall to 14?
So I had a conversation, this very conversation, with somebody over the last couple of days. And the two names that jump out to me, one of them I almost don't believe, but it was sold to me that, you know, maybe he's not as athletic as he appeared at Duke last year. There are defensive questions about him. And there is a long injury history that a lot of teams are going through right now. It's AJ Griffin. I find that hard to believe because I think he's the prototypical wing. He's the kind of guy that teams around the NBA are looking for, especially with the shooting that he showed this past year at Duke.
He's a sprint to the podium guy for the Cavs, I think. Like, yeah, it's,
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so, because like some of these other people, Justin, it's like, are they a two? Are they a three? Are they a three? Are they a four? And like AJ Griffin is the three.
Yeah.
Like one of the few natural threes in this year's class who also happens to shoot it extremely well. But there are questions that the medicals are going to be really, really interesting with him because of his history of knee and ankle issues. And like I said, the defense is just not favorable for him whatsoever. And I think Johnny Davis too, Justin, because I think there are people around the NBA that wonder if he's going to be a prolific enough three-point threat. A lot of his game is in the mid-range. So, you know, I think he's probably going to end up going top 10.
Mm-hmm.
But I
could see a team like the Spurs valuing him. Like he's kind of like a little bit of a Dyson Daniels in the sense that like just really high basketball IQ, plays defense. Like to me, he's almost like an elevated version of what the Cavs had in Delonte West, like that combo guard that's going to fill in the gaps, defensive minded, high basketball IQ. Obviously, you hope there's not the off court issues, but like Delonte was one of my favorite players when he was with the Cavs. Like he really filled a need, and I like him. Like he's not someone that. I mean, let's be honest, at this range, I'm going to be trying to talk myself into all these guys. Like all these guys have their strengths. They have their weaknesses.
Right.
And it's really going to come down to player development. But he's someone that I don't see like super high upside, but I think he would work out incredibly well.
Right. So that's the reason why I think there's potential for him to fall, because there are some of the guys that we've talked about, Dyson Daniels, Mathurin, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. Like they're just there's more upside attached to them. And there are elite level traits that I think people feel like would translate better.
Mm-hmm.
That usually, Justin, teams are looking for in the top 10. Like if you're a team that's looking to hit a home run in the top 10, I'm not sure that's Johnny Davis.
Yeah.
You know, even Malachi Branham, I think a team would be willing to talk themselves into his upside, his ceiling, a little bit more than they would Johnny Davis if they're looking for a double or a home run.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think Davis could be an interesting name that could potentially slide out of the top 10.
Yeah, I guess the most encouraging thing from a Cavs fan perspective is it seems like there's going to be a lot of options that are interesting for the Cavs at 14, because you look at it, I mean, the top eight, Chet, Jabari, Paolo, Ivy, Murray, Daniels, Sharp, and probably like even Duren. I don't know if a center is going to go before the Cavs, but someone like Jalen Duren has that kind of exciting upside. He's so young. You're already at eight there. And then after that, it's Mathurin, it's Griffin, Sohan, Davis, Branham, Dalen Terry, if you're going to put him in that mix, Jalen Williams, Tari Eason, Ochai Agbaji.
Yeah.
Like there's so many names available at that range. So I think personally, like someone like Mathurin, I don't think there's any chance he slips to the Cavs. Griffin would be really high on my list. Davis, Branham, and Terry is probably kind of like my five that might be in that range if they slip. But I was not expecting the Cavs to be in this position. I was not familiar with this draft, and I'm not someone that watches a lot of college to begin with. So I rely pretty heavily on the draft experts.
And you know what, Justin? They weren't expected to be in this position either.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of that, they feel like they're playing with house money here.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, I see them at this point more likely to try and take that home run swing and find the long-term solution at the three, as opposed to going the safer route and the ready-made route. which is like Abaji.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to try and find somebody with more of a ceiling than that if they're going to have this lottery pick and if they're going to keep this lottery pick.
How high, like when you walk up to the Magic Curtain, you know, the Wizard of Oz Curtain, and talk to the Cavs, how high do you think the risk tolerance is when it comes to a swing? Because you look at someone like Usman Jang, and I get the upside. I know he finished stronger, but he is so incredibly raw. And I feel like if you're taking a swing and you're the Cavs that do have expectations for next year and have a lot of competition for playing time, you almost kind of want to have one guy that at least has one NBA skill that you can count on and then try to round out the game from there versus somebody that's maybe a jack of all trades from a talent standpoint, but doesn't have them refined at an NBA level yet.
I think they're willing to take the big, big swing.
Okay.
That's the sense that I get. Because if you look at what they have going into next year and the opportunity that presents itself potentially in free agency, if they have access to the full mid-level exception, and that is tied to what they do with Colin Sexton, I think they feel, and they could be wrong on this, right? There may be some fans that say, they're nuts for thinking this way. I think they feel they have enough guys to fill out their rotation in a competent way, especially at the number three spot. Lamar Stevens is somebody that they still believe in. Dean Wade is somebody that they like who can play the three and the four. Jetty Osman, they believe, is coming off his best year. Mm-hmm. Jetty believes it was his best year. So no, those aren't Brandon Ingram types. Those aren't Jason Tatum types. They're not Jaylen Brown types. But they're guys that the Cavs feel like can play the three and they can get by with those guys at the three. So I think they're looking at it saying, all right, if we took Abaji, who's more of a plug-and-play guy, or if we took Jalen Williams, who's more of a plug-and-play guy, they're already further along on the developmental curve. How many minutes are we going to give them early in their career with what's in front of them, right? Where are they going to slide into the immediate rotation? And is it worth it to get somebody who projects maybe as like the sixth, seventh, eighth man in a rotation? Or should we try and take the home run swing because we shouldn't have this first round pick anyway? We didn't think we were going to have this first round pick anyway. And we also still have Caris LeVert on this roster. Mm-hmm. And he can play the three. They feel like he can play the three, the two and the three. So because this is a situation where they're in prime position, Justin, to take that home run swing based on what they already have on the roster and based on what could be there available for them at 14, I think they're going to step to the plate and do that.
That's really interesting.
Even if the guy is like 2 years away.
I'm going to be honest. I'm hoping OKC takes Jang because he just scares me. Like I get the upside, but you know, you can have your Chet, your Jang, your Poku, and every other lanky guy that you want. OKC, go ahead and take that risk for me. I want someone that I can feel just a little bit more confident in, but I also like I see the upside. Like the you can see, like, even if he doesn't hit his kind of 99th percentile outcome, like you can see a Nick Batum type impact from a guy with those kind of physical tools. Now, one young guy that we haven't talked about yet, measured 6'5", barefoot, 6'6", in shoes, younger than Keegan Murray, Abaji, Liddell, Beauchamp, basically the same age as Tari Eason, Jalen Williams, and even Evan Mobley. Can you guess who I'm talking about, Chris?
Malachi Branham?
No, I'm talking about Isaac Okoro.
Well, sure. Okay.
not a draft prospect, but he's the same age as a lot of the guys that you kind of hear in this top 20 mix or even younger. What's the sense that you get when it comes to Isaac Okoro of the when you talk to people about the season that he had, where does he kind of fit into the future and whatnot? Because I kind of consider myself to be an Okoro centrist. Like, I think he brings a lot to the table. I don't necessarily see the real high upside. Like when you talked to Nance before last season and he was talking about how he had the highest upside out of the young core, I haven't seen that.
I don't think anybody's seen that.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, what's kind of the sense of the season he had and where he fits into the future?
It's a really, really important year for Isaac. But I do believe that there are still people inside this organization that believe in Isaac, believe in his upside, believe in his untapped potential. The way that Kobe Altman phrased it is that they're going to try and unlock him. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what that means. But the truth is, Justin, if they're going to give him 28 to 30 minutes a night, he needs to be more of a threat on the offensive end of the floor.
Yeah.
Brooklyn ignored him completely. Well, Brooklyn started with Seth Curry on a banged up ankle guarding Isaac Okoro, and they basically used Seth as the extra defender to keep Darius out of the paint. Mm-hmm. And they just left him open. They didn't even close out on his shots. And Isaac missed back-to-back threes. Maybe it was three threes in a row in that play-in game against Brooklyn, and then JB had to pull him. And then going into the play-in tournament game against Atlanta, JB said, Trae Young's just going to hide on Isaac, and Isaac's not going to do enough on the offensive end to make Trae pay. He's not going to do enough on the offensive end to exploit that particular matchup. And JB said, I've got to change the starting lineup, and I've got to put more offensive threats out there so Trae has nowhere to hide on the defensive end, and we can make him work hard on the defensive end, and maybe that's going to hurt his offense. Now, that didn't work. Trae went bananas in the second half, but that's what their game plan was going in. That's why JB took Isaac out of the starting lineup. So they understand if they're going to play him close to starters' minutes, he's got to be more reliable from three-point range, and he's got to be a threat, and he's got to be willing to take those shots. He can't be a passive offensive player because teams are just going to ignore him. They're going to load up on Darius. If Colin Sexton's back or Caris LeVert is back, they're going to load up on them as well. And it just restricts the way that the Cavs can go about things on the offensive end of the floor. So that's a really, really long way of saying they believe in him, but recognize that there are flaws that he needs to correct going into his third year. And I would say this, Justin, if your name is not Darius Garland, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, I wouldn't feel fully comfortable about being a member of this core at the moment. I think if the Cavs want to go down the road this offseason of trying to make a shakeup of the roster and try and go for a bigger trade, some of the names that you've heard, then I think you start looking at some of those more expendable young pieces, and Isaac would be one of those guys.
That's interesting. And the reason I asked the question the way I did is because we talk about these prospects coming out that are the same age as Okoro, and like we can develop these guys. And even when Okoro was coming in the draft, like Gavoni had him third on his big board by the time of the draft and said, hey, he's probably about 5 years away offensively, but like I believe he's there. But once a guy enters the NBA, we forget about that developmental curve. We forget about the years it might take. And I think it's wrong to write off the development. But at the same time, like I think unlocking is the right term because what he did was good. It was just at such a low volume that teams aren't going to respect it. Like the flashes are there, the reads, the basketball IQ, the 3-point shooting got better, but 3-point shooting without volume doesn't have the same gravity. I mean, that's the difference going from Lowry Markkanen to Dean Wade in a lineup, right?
Yeah. And the thing that I'll say about Isaac, the thing that he has on his side, Justin, we talk about this all the time when it comes to the offseason and the Cavs trying to make additions or other NBA teams trying to make additions. What you're trying to find, it's not necessarily a position, it's a skill set. You're trying to bring something to the roster that you don't currently have. Isaac is different than basically everybody else on this roster except for Lamar Stevens, where he's a defensive first guy. He's somebody who can take those tougher defensive assignments so Darius Garland doesn't have to, so Colin Sexton doesn't have to, and there's value in that. I don't know how to quantify that value, but there's value in that. And all of the advanced metrics point to the combination of Darius and Isaac at this moment being better than the combination of Darius and Colin. And part of the reason for that is because of what Isaac brings to you on the defensive end of the floor. He's not a stopper. He's not Marcus Smart. He's not going to be in the defensive player of the year conversation, but he helps Darius on the defensive end of the floor. And he helps Lowry on the defensive end of the floor. So that some of those matchups that those guys would have to take, they don't have to take.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at Marcus Smart, and I think the thing that Boston realized with him and part of his development curve was the similar thing. Like, even if you are an elite defender at the guard position, there is so much talent there that guys are going to hit shots. Kyrie is going to drop 40 That's on true. Marcus Smart at times because he's just that level of an offensive talent. And Smart had to develop the three-point shooting at least at volume, like getting that volume up. The playmaking got better as time progressed. He's obviously not a pure point guard, and Boston's kind of playing without a pure point guard, but he added enough offensively to justify what he was bringing to the table. And I think that's kind of where it's going with Okoro. And all of this kind of ties into one of the things that I'm really curious about. And that question is, what is the Cavs timeline? Like, what do you get the sense is of where they plan to be? Because you look at the extensions that Kobe and JB signed, those kind of five-year extensions. And to me, that kind of indicates a five-year plan of trying to move forward. Where do you see the Cavs? Where do you kind of picture them setting the goals for next season, and what's kind of that progression in your mind?
I think the goal next season, Justin, is playoffs. But I think we have to understand that this is not Milwaukee. This is not Miami. This is not Boston. This is not Philadelphia. This is not championship or bust. Like, that's not the mentality. Yes, they want to compete for a championship. Yes, they want to get to the playoffs. But they feel really good about their young core and the future that they have, that I don't think they feel it necessary to break it up in a significant way. They didn't have the kind of season, Justin, where they're going into this offseason saying, we've got to do a whole bunch of different stuff to this roster, right? What we have simply doesn't work and doesn't fit. What they know is that their three core players, Darius Garland, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, they're all going to be here for a long time. They believe in them and they all fit together well. That's a big, big component here. And like I said, if you're outside of those guys, you probably feel a little bit nervous. But it's not like they're coming off a 22 win season where they're saying nothing that we're doing is working. We've got to blow it up. We've got to start over from scratch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think if the opportunity presents itself, if there is an opportunity for them to significantly improve this roster at one of the positions that needs improving, then they're going to explore it and they're going to think about that. But everybody talks about they need a wing, they need a wing. Well, yeah, of course they do. And they know that. They've known that for the last couple of years. But those are also the most difficult things to find in the NBA.
Which is part of why I advocate for taking one at 14, because it's so hard to get one.
Yes.
Try to take a swing at one and then hold on for dear life.
Think about this, Justin. The best wings available in free agency this offseason, forget Miles Bridges because he's a restricted free agent and he wants close to the max, and that's just not happening. Beyond that, it's Kyle Anderson, Bruce Brown, and Joe Ingles coming off a torn ACL. And TJ Warren, who hasn't played in 2 years because he's got foot issues. Like, that's the market for a wing in free agency, right? Because if you have one of those guys, a two-way wing that can shoot it from the outside and does all the things that you want from that position, those guys aren't hitting free agency. Mm-hmm. The teams are going to keep those guys, or they're going to trade them for a king's ransom. You know, at last year's trade deadline, Utah was asking for a first-round pick as a starter for Bogdanovich. Like, that's a lot for that kind
that
of guy. You know what I mean? Because, like, how much is he really going to move the needle for a team like the Cavs? Yeah, he makes them better. Yeah, he's better than Jetty Osman and Isaac Okoro and maybe even Lauri Markkanen. He's more natural at that particular position. You know what I mean? But do you really want to give up a first-round pick for that small of an upgrade?
Yeah.
You know, just to say that you're better at that particular position? So, if the opportunity presents itself and they feel like they have the components to go out and significantly improve an area on the roster that needs that, they're going to explore it. But I just don't think they feel like it's necessary to make a panic move.
Yeah, those marginal type moves can make a difference when you're at that contending stage. But They're so young. Like, it just, I think the expectations, like, from my perspective next season are pretty regular season based. Like, I think this team can be really competitive in the regular season. You want to see that internal growth. You want to see, like, I'm okay with maybe taking a step back at times because we're trying to get Mobley more playmaking reps, and it's all kind of in the service of development, but they should absolutely have regular season expectations. Yeah. It's just, historically speaking, we see, like, you take lumps in the playoffs, like Memphis, all these good young teams take lumps. Look at Boston. I was on a Celtics podcast earlier this year, and they were talking about how the Cavs are a clearly better team than Boston. And it was kind of like, hey, help us give an outsider's perspective on what's going on with Boston. And I was talking about, hey, like, you know, it's right now Boston has probably the top tier pieces here, like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, but they're not more than the sum of their parts. And I think there's lessons to be learned looking at teams like Boston, Golden State, Miami, Dallas. Like, these teams all had missteps in the team building process over the last few years. They've had stretches where it wasn't working, made shakeups. And, you know, a lot of the development, like the path to the Cavs becoming a better team, a lot of that's coming internally. Like, that's what it has to be. Like, even going from last season to this season, they were one of the worst defenses in the league and traded probably their best defensive player or in that conversation for someone that didn't bring defense to the table in Lauri Markkanen, who ended up fitting the scheme, and it worked out way better than I would have expected. Like, I think internal growth is going to be the biggest thing for this team. And if someone like Okoro or Sexton or one of these guys or whoever they pick at 14 hits, that could really move the needle.
Yeah. I think, Justin, there is a strong likelihood that the Cavs run it back. It back very, very similar to what they had last year. And they make smaller moves in free agency, maybe a small trade here or there, and see what they can do in the draft. I think that's a strong likelihood, just based on how they feel about this roster and how they feel about the future and what they feel like is out there on the market that is actually realistically attainable and what that is going to cost. You know, if you're going to trade for Bogdanović from Atlanta, Bogey, because they want to shake things up for the Hawks, that is going to be extremely costly. You know, Jeremy Grant, if you're going to trade for him, you're talking about a first-round pick plus a young player plus being willing to pay him a massive contract extension that he's going to want. If you're going to persuade Toronto to even think about OG Anunoby or Gary Trent Jr., you know what I mean?
Like, I refuse to believe that's a possibility.
You've got to go above and beyond in order to make those guys think about the possibility of that. If you're going to make Golden State think about giving up Andrew Wiggins after this playoff run that he had, right, because he's going in the last year of his deal and they're in salary cap hell, like, these teams are going to ask for Darius or Jarrett or Evan, or they're going to ask for an unprotected first-round pick in the future. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to ask for Colin Sexton or Caris LeVert or Lauri Markkanen or Isaac Okoro. Like, they're going to ask for those things as enhancers to a deal, not the centerpiece of a deal. So getting a wing, everybody knows they need one. Even the NBA knows that they need one. So they're going to jack up the price, and it's going to be extremely difficult. I just don't see a realistic path to that happening.
I think even if the Cavs came with the best offer possible for OG, I think Masai would take less to send him somewhere else because, that's a good point that someone probably is beating that. But I'm saying in a hypothetical world where teams, for whatever reason, too many late nights, weren't thinking straight, didn't put together a good offer, I don't think Masai's letting OG, Mobley, and Allen be a front court they have to go through at any point. Like, I can't picture that. Now, when it comes to the guys that I know they're not the core, but let's call it the secondary core of young guys like an Okoro, Sexton, whoever they pick at 14, Lowry, do you see any possibility that they would move off of those guys for someone that maybe doesn't fit? Let's call it the next 4 or 5 years of the timeline, like a more short-term type move.
So I'll start here. I think there are people inside the organization, Justin, that feel like Lowry is a core piece.
Okay.
Because of his age, because of his contract, because of the skill set that he brings that other guys just don't have. Like, that floor spacing, that shooting, that length and athleticism is really, really appealing to the Cavs and how they want to play, especially around somebody like Darius Garland. So there are people inside the organization that believe that he belongs in the core. So he's probably the closest.
Okay.
Closer than Isaac, probably closer than Colin. Colin's a tricky situation because he's entering restricted free agency. They like him. He likes it here, but he doesn't have a contract next year at this point in time. Lauri Markkanen does. So I do think they would entertain those kinds of deals that you're talking about, Justin. Mm-hmm. But it has to be for the right guy. And I don't think it's just going to be for a quick fix. Like, if they're going to go into that kind of discussion where it's either Colin or Isaac or even Lauri, it has to be for somebody that they're going to control for some period of time that goes beyond just this season.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the right way to go. I mean, it's otherwise you're selling short. Like, there's a possibility, like, assuming Sexton's back, there's a possibility that it works in the regular season. And over the next year or two, you run into some postseason issues, the fit concerns that people have come to fruition, and you have to make an assessment there. The issue Portland had with Dame and CJ wasn't that they gave CJ a second contract. It's that when Kawhi Leonard and all these guys hit the market, they didn't do the Toronto consolidation trade, right? You at this point, if the trade value doesn't match the upside, I just don't see it. But if something became available unexpected, like a Jared Allen type situation where, hey, this guy fits the timeline, he fits the core, this is going to work, I can see something like that. Right. Now, how big of a relief is it going to be when the Sexton situation is resolved for you?
Oh, my God. Please. I have spent more time in my life. I covered the Cavs in the finals with LeBron, Kyrie, Kevin Love. Like, I did that. I was there in Oakland for those series. And I have spent more time in my life talking about Colin Sexton than any other player that I have covered.
Even Kevin Love?
LeBron.
Even Kevin Love?
Yes. Even more than Kevin Love.
Okay.
100%. I have conversations on a daily basis with agents, with scouts, with opposing executives, with Cavs executives, just like trying to figure out, like, what is the view of Colin Sexton around this league? And I just need this thing to end. Somehow, some way, I need a resolution for my own sanity, because I can't keep writing the same stuff about Colin Sexton. I can't do it.
What do you think the largest gap between the public perception of the situation and what the situation actually is, as far as you can kind of glean, is?
So I think everybody has arrived at the same point, Justin, that Colin Sexton has value. And there are things that he brings to the table that teams, including the Cavs, like. But we have reached a point where the Cavs and the rest of the NBA have to attach a monetary value to that. And that is what is becoming the trickiest part. It's not that people look at Colin and say, he can't play, we don't like him at all. It's just, what things do you value the most? What are you willing to pay for those? And does Colin bring those to the table? Mm-hmm. Point blank, Justin, there are teams around the NBA, and you know this, there are teams around the NBA that simply will not start a dude like him at shooting guard because they believe in size, because they believe in versatility, because they believe in length, because they believe in switchability. You know what I mean? So there are certain teams that are just out on Colin Sexton, even though he can go out and get a bucket, even though he is only 23 years old. There are just certain teams that will not start a non-traditional shooting guard, not in today's NBA. So I think that's probably the biggest breakdown when it comes to the perception of Colin and the reality of Colin. Just because there are certain teams that do not want to start him, that doesn't mean that every team sees him the same way, and that doesn't mean that every team thinks that he stinks.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people can fall into love with archetypes more than talent.
Yeah, like, without a doubt.
I think you ran into that with Duncan Robinson. Like, I think, like, people hey, big shooter, wing, this is what we need. Whereas Sexton, like, yeah, he's 6'1", but he has a 6'8 wingspan. We love that in the draft, but then when we see it in the NBA, it's different.
We saw it in the NBA that doesn't defend anybody.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a trouble. And part of why I hate, like, I feel like the situation is made so much worse because of the meniscus situation, because
for sure.
I was really interested in how he was playing to start the season, where
I agree.
He wasn't ball dominant. And even though the efficiency was down a little bit, the 2-point field goal percentage was a career high. And if he shot the 3-pointer at even his career average rate, well, that's 1-3 more a game, and he's a 20-point per game scorer. And the defensive metrics finally were better. If you look at defensive EPM, he was in the 70th percentile. Like, and that's what I was hoping, that when there's more talent around, some of that defensive potential we saw at Alabama starts to come through. But there just isn't the proof of concept with this current core. So that's difficult. I personally, like, I want to see him back. Like, I want to bet on him. Like, I understand the long-term fit concerns, and I think it's something they may run into in the future, but just given the fact that he came in as a mid-range shooter, that was his primary skill, and in his rookie year, with all the noise around him, he abandoned what was his primary strength and added a three-point shot. He went away from that to improve his shot profile. Moved to the shooting guard position his second year. Struggled to start the year, but played a lot better. Following year, build upon that success. In April of that year, Garland all of a sudden was assertive. He's putting up those points and assists, while Sexton was also playing really well. And it's funny, like, part of why Carter and I did the whole Sexland thing is because we wanted people to view them as a duo. We didn't want a repeat of the Kyrie Dion dynamic, because it just doesn't seem to be the case with these two. Like, they'll go out wearing the same shoes every game. I believe you reported that they're going on vacation soon.
They are.
Yeah. Yep. This isn't that kind of a situation. So at this point, I'd like to bet on the talent, and let's see, like, give someone with that kind of a work ethic the opportunity to earn the spot and to change his perception, because everyone else on the team had the opportunity to change their perception last year.
He's the kind of guy that I'd be willing to bet on. Yeah. And I understand the flaws exist, and you can't ignore them, especially when you're talking about free agency negotiations, right? You can't overlook flaws when you're doing that. If you're going to commit to somebody and you're going to make a long-term investment, you have to make an honest assessment of everything he is, good and bad. But he's a guy that I would bet on personally. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a guy that Kobe Altman will bet on eventually. I just think it's always with the caveat at the right price.
Yeah.
And I think there are multiple things on the Cavs side here. Justin, one of them is what you mentioned. He only played 11 games. He's coming off a meniscus tear. That is a significant injury that raises questions. There were questions about Colin coming in this year to begin with. We touched on all of them, at least when you're talking about what the league sees in Colin Sexton. Adding on to that is that the Cavs won 44 games without him. That doesn't help his leverage. And there are only four teams with projectable cap space currently. There are other teams that could make cap space if they wanted to. Just don't know that Colin Sexton's the kind of player that you're going to make cap space for. That's just me personally.
That's a good point.
So there are five teams that have cap space currently, right? And two of them you can just cancel. Portland is setting their sights elsewhere.
Yeah.
We know that. They're not putting together Dame and another small guard.
I think they would prioritize a RFA offer to Aiton or something like that.
DeAndre Aiton, Jeremy Grant, Zach LaVine, somebody like that.
Yeah.
So you can ignore them, and you can take Orlando out of the mix because they have 100 guards. And they had an opportunity to draft Colin in 2018, and they took Mo Bamba. So I don't think that's happening. Detroit is really, really interesting, but they're also in position at five to get Jaden Ivey.
Honestly, them falling in the draft feels so significant, and I feel this hasn't been discussed enough, because if they were adding Paolo or Chet or Jabari, all of a sudden you need that dynamic guard. But the fact that the guys available at five, like, you might have Shaedon Sharpe, Jaden Ivey.
Yep.
If they draft Keegan Murray, maybe that changes the dynamic, but there's a lot of guards in that mix. So I feel like that was a big development.
I agree. So I do think they have an interesting Colin. I do think they feel like that would be a good fit next to Cade. That is a team that people inside the Cavs organization are worried about. They think they could take a run at Colin. San Antonio has multiple members in that front office that like Colin Sexton. In fact, one of them a few years ago that was not with San Antonio at the time, but a few years ago, one of them recommended Colin to Kobe Altman. It is somebody that Kobe knows. It is somebody that Kobe trusts. It is somebody that Kobe talks to every single offseason, especially around the time of the draft. That person is now working in the San Antonio Spurs front office. So that is a Colin supporter. I think that would work with DeJounte Murray, especially how long, rangy, defensive-minded he is, disruptive he can be on the defensive end of the floor. So I do think that's a real possibility. I think Indiana's a real possibility as well. So I'm told that Colin's camp believes there are multiple suitors for him in restricted free agency. And Washington is another team that I have heard that would potentially explore a sign and trade for somebody like Colin. So there are multiple suitors for Colin, but it all comes down to price, Justin. You know this, the Cavs know this, and it's like, how much would those teams be willing to make in terms of an offer sheet? And would it get to the point that the Cavs would not be willing to match it? Mm-hmm. I find it hard to believe that there is a team out there that's going to give him a contract north of $20 million annually. Mm-hmm. The Cavs find it hard to believe that a team is going to give him north of $20 million annually. Mm-hmm. And if it's not north of $20 million, then I think the Cavs would be willing to match. And maybe they try and flip him after that. But I just don't think they're going to let him walk in free agency. They're going to protect the asset.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite anecdotes was Bomani Jones was talking about his contract negotiations at ESPN. And apparently what he said is he tells his agent not to talk to him, not to let him know about the offers until we get to like round three. Otherwise, he's going to take everything personally, because when you're in these negotiations, both sides start off at an extreme.
Right.
You bring up the flaws. You bring up the flaws each other have. And eventually you get to the middle. And I think that's something everyone needs to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Perspective here. Now, we said before, if they would move off of somebody kind of in that secondary core, it would need to be kind of a long-term view. Would you say that's the same thing if a sign and trade thing were to occur with Sexton, that they would need to, the equivalents in assets that they'd get back would need to be something that kind of fits their future?
Yeah.
Or if, let's say, it got up to like 22, 23, like kind of that murky range that you might lose the mid-level exception as a result of it, like it, all kind of the consequences there. Do you think they'd try to make the space in other ways to at least maintain the asset in Sexton if sign and trade talks weren't fruitful in that way?
So they have the flexibility to do that, Justin. Mm-hmm. They could probably ship off Dylan. They could do something when it comes to Dean Wade, when it comes to Lamar Stevens.
Or maybe so I think even Jetty, who fell out of the rotation.
Maybe Jetty. You're right about that. They could probably package Jetty and maybe a future second-round pick and see what that nets them. So I feel like they feel they have that flexibility, that if they had to create more space, there's a pathway to doing that. But I'm glad you brought it up, because I don't think enough people understand this. There is, for the Cavs, based on their projections, with the 14th pick included, there is about a $21 million buffer for Colin Sexton negotiations. And if it goes above that, they will not have full access to the mid-level exception. And they would be dangerously close to the luxury tax, which is something that I believe they want to avoid again, if they can. So if we're talking about them trading up in the first round, acquiring another first round pick, that in turn has a domino effect on Colin Sexton negotiations and what they would be willing to give him in a contract, because they would want the full access to the mid-level exception. So keep that $21 million buffer in mind. And that's all with the salary placeholder of the 14th overall pick. If it goes from the 14th overall pick to the 9th overall pick, that salary placeholder changes.
do you get the sense there is an appetite? Like, even like, let's say someone like Marjon Beauchamp, who they're looking into, if he's available at 27, like, do you think there's an appetite to move around in this draft?
I think that would be risky for them when it comes to Colin negotiations, when it comes to the mid-level exception, and when it comes to maybe moving other money around of guys that they value. You know what I mean?
I don't hate staying at 39 and getting Andrew Nembhard or Caleb Houston or any other Canadians to pander to me. I'm fine with that.
Are there other ones other than that?
Yeah, those are the two that jump out that might be that range. Nembhard would be a lot of fun. I think he could bring a little bit to the table at the backup point guard position.
I agree. I think there are other guys that they could look at that is like 50-50 to even crack the rotation.
Nah.
You know what I mean? Or 50-50 to last on the roster. So I think it would, to answer your question, Justin, I think it would have to be for the right guy, and they would have to love the guy the way that they loved Kevin Porter Jr. a couple of years ago. They would have to love the guy that much to, you know, make those dominoes start falling the way that they would. And that's the fascinating thing, I think, Justin, about the offseason, is that everything is connected. You know, Colin is connected to Caris LeVert, and Caris is connected to Colin, and Colin's connected to the mid-level exception. And what they do in the draft with the 14th overall pick is connected to free agency and what kind of player they target there. It's just, there are a lot of dominoes that are going to fall, or none of them are going to fall. You know what I mean?
And if you
really, really fascinating.
And if you move in the draft, maybe you're moving salary along with it to gain the flexibility. There's so much that goes into it. And that's why I feel like it's tough to even talk trade or free agency hypotheticals until we see what happens with the draft. Like it's really tricky. Now, I want to be respectful of your time and not keep you all night, but there is one question.
It's all right, man. Little man's already sleeping, so we're good.
Perfect. Love that. You did mention Lowry kind of being viewed as kind of a core piece, and he really impressed me in a lot of different ways last season. But I do have a question with looking at kind of the desire to add a wing. And, you know, you already have now, if Collins back and LeVert's back, you have wing minutes spoken for. Okoro is probably going to be in that mix as well. The 14th pick could be in that mix.
Right.
Jetty, like, it's kind of creating a crunch. And if Lowry isn't getting as many minutes at the three, it means he has to get it at the backup four. And he makes sense with Mobley and Allen. But that makes me wonder what's going to happen with Kevin Love. And from my perspective, those guys can stay on the team for as long as they want. But at the same time, there's a lot of kind of, it gets tricky from rotation management standpoint. And like, do you want to make Love kind of the backup five to create opportunity? That probably depends on how Mobley develops as kind of the anchor defensively. And if he can step up in that way, like, what do you think the kind of future of Love and Lowry is on this team?
If you would have asked me this last year, I would have said, Kev's an expiring contract, and they're going to cash in on that because they've been waiting 4 years for his contract to be an expiring.
Rehab value, right? Like that's
right.
And I assume when Lowry was brought in that he was basically going to be like maybe a second sixth man where he's splitting his time with Mobley and Allen and kind of accentuating the investments they made in those guys. But Kevin's just brought so much value on and off the court.
He has, and his teammates love him, and he is one of the few veterans and adults that they currently have on this roster, and they need that. You cannot have a roster full of young kids that have never been there, especially if you're going to have playoff expectations. So I think they value Kevin. I think they understand that there is a role for him here, and he showed this past year that he's willing to accept that role, and he can excel in that role. And I think they understand that, you know, like minimizing Kevin's minutes throughout the course of the regular season is beneficial to him, and that's going to increase his effectiveness. But saying that, like, he is a trade asset. He is one of the trade assets that they have because he is a valuable expiring contract. And if they're going to go hunting for a big name, he is their pathway to that. He's their pathway to that, Justin, without stacking a bunch of salaries and including a salary of a guy that you probably don't want to include.
Right, right. Because a lot of the kind of guys that have young potential, like an Okoro and whatnot, they don't
make anything.
Yeah, there's not the money matching capabilities there.
Right. So you would have to start stacking maybe Lowry or maybe Karras. Hmm. And I think in the right trade, they would move Karras if negotiations don't go well this offseason. Mm-hmm. Or if they feel like there's a better fitting player, if they can bring Colin back and there's a better fitting player than Karras because they feel like Colin and Karras are duplicates,
yeah.
Then I could see them going that direction, right? But like Kevin allows them the freedom that if they want to get involved with Gordon Hayward or they want to get involved with Tobias Harris, they have a salary that matches those really, really easy.
Yeah.
So it just opens up different options for them if they want to make that kind of trade. But I think right now they're looking at him as an asset for them, not necessarily as an asset for another team. And if this was a year ago, he was an asset for another team because he was an expiring contract.
I got to be honest, it's still one of my favorite parts of this whole story. Like I just, and you know, it's a great example. Like even if you look at someone like Karis LeVert, like the Kevin Love situation, the extension didn't work out at the time, but you know, he ended up making an impact off the court first last season where he wasn't healthy. And then, you know, it just transformed into what it was this season. And Karras, like, I can understand, like, Karras kind of falls in the same category as Sexton and Okoro for me, where I just can't imagine the trade value is worth the upside of at least starting the year and seeing. Right. Because Karras, like, you look at points per possession as a pick and roll ball handler, it's higher than even Garland. Like, and the entire time post All-Star break, except for the Atlanta game where Jared Allen was playing with one hand, like he did not have a pick and roll partner to be with. Like it's worth at least seeing to me. And maybe there is an opportunity that's better than I expected. Like I never expected Dante Exum and the Bucks first round pick to net Jared Allen. If I proposed that on this podcast, I get a million emails and my Twitter mentions would blow up and everyone would assume I'm
never
going to
happen. You're nuts.
They'd assume I'm crazier than I look when I'm wearing a jersey as a 30-year-old. That's a little bit out of shape now. Like but you know, you never know what opportunities are out there, but it does feel like they're in an interesting position where they do have a high second round pick. They have the 14th pick. They have all these expiring contracts. Yeah. And even though that doesn't have as much value as it used to, there's still at least a helpful player attached to each one of those expiring contracts. So they are in a very, very interesting situation this offseason.
It's interesting too, Justin, because there are enough justifiable reasons for the play of Karis LeVert in the final 2 months after they got him from Indiana that aren't excuses. Mm-hmm. They're just the reality that they had to deal with. It's hard to come into a team midway through the season to begin with. Midseason trade guys usually take some time to get acclimated. Look how long it took Derek White for the Boston Celtics. You know what I mean? So it's just not the same for everybody. Even Doc Rivers talked about it with James Harden.
I mean, Derek White was a Jimmy Butler three-pointer away from being a bad trade. Like, that's the thing about the postseason is every result feels so resounding. When Boston won game one, it felt like, oh, they're going to sweep. And then Golden State wins game two. Oh, Golden State's figured it out. They're going to be fine. It feels the same way with Atlanta. Like when the Cavs are in the postseason, it's, oh, look at the way Lowry got hunted. He can't work at the three. Right. Karras didn't work out. Like everything feels so resounding. And I feel like one of the lessons from this postseason that Cavs fans can take is it's not that final. Like these are human beings that can play better. They can play worse. Getting used to a new situation takes time. Midseason trades are so tricky and they so rarely result in a title for that reason. And when you look at Karras being kind of a pick and roll specialist, not having a pick guy with him in Jared Allen, like I'd love for Evan Mobley to be a little stronger in that area next year, but I'm interested to see how it ends up working out.
Yeah. So you start there with Karras, right? Yeah. Midseason trade, difficult to begin with. Comes back from the All-Star break, steps on a teammate's foot. So he's not 100%. He misses games first, Then he comes back. He's not 100%. He said he didn't feel like himself. He said he didn't have his first step that he was used to. He didn't have that explosiveness. So there are a lot of things that he was working through. But they had been waiting for months, Justin, to see the five-man lineup of Darius, Karras, Lowry, Evan, and Jarrett. They got one game.
Yeah.
They got 24 minutes. It was the play-in game against Atlanta. That five-man group shredded the Hawks. Offensively, it was a juggernaut. Defensively, it locked down Atlanta. Small sample size,
yeah.
One matchup, one team, favorable matchup probably based on the skill set of all those five guys. But there was enough there that the Cavs said, well, wait a minute. Like, this might be something. This is what we kind of envisioned when we traded for Karis LeVert. We thought about this potential five-man lineup. And if it had that kind of success against Atlanta, where its net rating was over 17, it gives them enough to say, we're optimistic that with a full offseason, no injuries from Karis, more time to acclimate to J.B. Bickerstaff and all of his teammates, you know, the Karis that we're going to get in 22-23 is going to be a different guy than the one that we got for the final 2 months of the regular season this past year.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny how tricky it is to evaluate last year, because we went into the season saying the Cavs need to develop an identity. They came into the season with one. There was motion offense. It was beautiful offense, really. And instead of building off of what they had in through training camp and through the beginning of the season, they actually had to kind of tear it down a little bit, because all of a sudden you lose Colin, you lose Ricky, then you lose Lowry, then you lose Darius, then you lose LeVert and Allen.
And it's everybody.
Everything has to get simplified, because you have guys being asked to do more than they'd be expected to do. And it was it was such a weird season, but it gives me a lot of reason to be hopeful next year. Like, I think it's a really exciting possibility. And even though I still think this is going to take time, like, I went into last season predicting 37 wins, being this crazy optimist, you know, I think this year I'm actually going to be kind of tempering expectations, because this is still a young team that's going to learn. But I do think that there's a lot of reason to be excited, because as good as that lineup was, reality is, Darius is probably going to be better. Lowry, Mobley, Allen, they're all likely going to get better, even if it's just within the margins. Excited to hopefully get Colin back. Hopefully we won't be in a position where there isn't a backup point guard again, because it's incredible that that happened going into last year with too many guards, in some people's opinion. Did you think it's even worth getting into the backup point guard discussion, or is that worth looking at, waiting for the draft? Because if they were to maybe take a second round pick on someone like Nembhard, then maybe you feel better about bringing back Ricky, because you at least have a stopgap in place in a young player that might get those reps.
Ty Washington. Yeah, I mean, if they go Ty Washington at 14, like, it's easy to justify him potentially being that backup ball handler.
I'm going to be honest. I haven't watched any Ty. Like, I know he's in the mix, but just given the roster construction, I can't. Like, I don't have strong takes. Last year, I was adamant that it's Mobley, not Suggs. I even had Scotty over Suggs. Like, I was like, you know what? But it's 100% Mobley. He's in a different tier. There are so many guys within the tier that they'll be picking from at 14. I just, I'm throwing my hands up. I kind of give them the benefit of the doubt here, because it's going to come down to player development more than who they pick, in my opinion.
Yeah, so, like, there are multiple people in the organization, Justin, that consider Ricky as part of the Cavs. When they're projecting their 15 man, they talk about Ricky as if he's on this roster, because there are many people that want him back. They like him. They saw the value that he brought to the table. The fit with Kevin was awesome. The fit next to Darius was as good as you could have expected, probably better than you could have expected. The Darius Ricky combination was the best two-man combination that the Cavs had by advanced metrics. They worked so well off each other offensively, and then defensively, Ricky brought it. So there are people that obviously want him back. I'm told that there's mutual interest. But there's a layer to this that makes it a little bit trickier than, well, Ricky fits so well. and he loved it here. And we've got Jose Calderon in the front office, and you know, Ricky has a bunch of teammates that he'd love to play with again. And this is an up and coming team that makes a lot of sense.
He and Joe Ingles for the mid level. Like we're just getting we're going to repair ACLs and hearts. Yes. We're going to bring them together.
That's the layer to it that makes it a little bit more complicated. That if the Cavs are going to go that route with Ricky, that means one of their other roster spots is going to have to be a competent point guard that can serve as a backup, that's good enough to be a backup in the first couple of months where Ricky is still recovering from his torn ACL. But that guy is also completely fine with being benched once Ricky comes back and not having a spot in the rotation. And I just don't know who fits those parameters. I don't know who they could get that would be okay with that kind of role.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's great to talk about Ricky that way, and he would be ideal for them. But they can't afford to do to Darius early in the season without Ricky, if they brought Ricky back, what they did to Darius, what they were forced to do to Darius at the end of this past season.
Yeah, or what happened to Kyrie in 2017, where sure. I had to wait till the buyout market with Deron Williams. Like that's
right.
That was tough, and even with Ricky, like I think he gave him a proof of concept. Like from a team building standpoint, you know Mobley and Allen are there. You know Darius is there. You know Darius works with another point guard. If that's the best talent that's available is a big point guard, you know that you can bring it in because Darius can play on and off ball. Like I think it makes team building easier. Part of me wonders, like, as much as I love Ricky, at the end of the day, like, it's not like he was so insanely effective individually. Like, he shot 36% from the floor, 34% from three. Right. That's probably going to come down a little bit. Like, was it more about the fact that this is how much better the offense is going to look just by having another veteran that can handle the ball, that, like, you know, has those instincts, and can you find someone else? Can you bring in a DeLon Wright? Can you bring in, even though he doesn't have the playmaking chops, like, can Sexton fill that role? Can LeVert?
Right.
Like, it's such an unknown. And even when he does come back, like, I feel like it is going to take time. So maybe the answer is bringing in a rookie like a Nembhard or some sort of point guard that's kind of trying to break into the league, and Ricky can be a bit of a coach and then also work his way back slowly. I don't know how it's going to go, but it is going to be interesting. Chris, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. I want to encourage everyone, make sure you check out the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. Make sure you subscribe to Chris's subtext as well so that you get the information, because Carter and I are subscribed. We get the information. We appreciate talk about it all day, and then we end up talking about it on the podcast. Not giving away what you have on there, but you know, it gets our brains turning for topics. So I appreciate that. And of course, support local journalism as well, because it's really damn important. And I'm saying that purely selfishly, because we need it for this podcast to function the way it does, because we are not in the source game, Chris.
Man, being in the source game is not a lot of fun.
Doesn't look like it. Really doesn't look like it.
Man, especially this time of year. Oh my God. Trying to extract information is really, really difficult.
Oh, I believe it. But thank you so much for the information. We really do appreciate it. I'm sure we'll have you on again. Really, really do appreciate it. Do you have anything coming up that you like to let people know that's coming up?
Coming up in the next couple of days before the weekend, I've got a big feature on Malachi Branham. I've spent a lot of time in the last week and a half, talking to people that know him best to try and figure out what kind of person he is, what it would mean to him to play for the Cavs, given that he played at St. Vincent St. Mary and he grew up in Columbus. And I've talked to a lot of scouts, former coaches, that sort of thing. It's on Malachi and just this rise that nobody really expected. You know, when he left St. Vincent St. Mary, I don't think a lot of people, Justin, said, yeah, this is a one and done. You know, if we were having a conversation November, December, I don't think a lot of people were saying lottery pick, borderline top 10 pick even. But that's the way that he is viewed right now. And it's through a crazy work ethic. And it's through a crazy basketball IQ. And obviously, he's got the skill set that many teams around the NBA are looking for, especially from the wing spot. So I've got that feature coming up before the weekend.
Well, I mean, as a marketing major myself, I love a storyline, and that's one of the cooler ones. It doesn't sound like he's going to be there at 14. I was so in on it, but it seems like, and I know Jonathan Wasserman said the same thing on the podcast, and yeah. Draft people I listen to are talking about him as high as 8 to the Pelicans, which I mean, great for him, but I just not as fun for me. But you know what? I've talked myself into Dalen Terry. I'm here for it. I went from Jalen to Dalen, and if they go Jeremy Soan, Tari Eason, like any of these guys are going to get me excited. So thank you so much, Chris. To all our listeners, thank you so much for supporting the podcast. If you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.